Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to start off right with the rail situation. While we are here in Georgia for the Georgia runoff, between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker, who we now find out lives in Texas. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. We did know that. We knew he now knows he lives in Texas. We'll get to that later. But the rail situation all over everyone's mind, all over the news. And here's my frustration. I'm going to start right with the most frustrating part of all of this. I've been saying from the beginning, this is the rail companies. These are the rail barons doing this. Yet our corporate-controlled for-profit media, you're not hearing that. You know what could have averted any of this discussion at all of it? You know what could have averted any of the potential sky falling, any of the potential economic catastrophe? You know what could have ended that? The rail companies, in good faith, going to the bargaining table and saying, we're going to hammer out an agreement that has dignity and respect for every working person. And that, yes, there are going to be sick days. But yet all we hear, all I've heard on the mainstream media, all I've heard on the F channels and the C channels, and all I've heard in our media, it's those unions. Those unions are holding the country hostage. Those unions are doing this. It's not the unions who are doing this. It's the rail barons who are doing this. It's these people who are making enormous, obscene amounts of profit. It's this. How come that's not the lead in the news? Rail barons made $23 billion last year. Deny workers any days off in a month. How come we don't hear that? How come we aren't hearing the working conditions of these workers? How come we're not hearing that? Why? Because it's easy to say, you know, these workers, these minority of the union members are holding all of us hostage. And what do they want? And this is the part where Democrats, listen up. This is where you can use this as something to bring people together. Because in every conversation I've been having over the last day, every one of them ends with, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know they don't get health. I didn't know they don't get days off. They don't get sick days. Because in this day and age, people think that sick days are, well, everyone's got them, except the people who don't. This could be a moment where the legislation that should have passed yesterday, the legislation that should have been put together, would have been sick days for everybody. There shouldn't have been two separate bills, one to force the PEB contract down the throats of these workers, and then one to say, oh, well, we want to add 7 sick days. There should have been one bill, one. That one bill should have said, yep, we're going to amend the PEB's contract. We're going to amend that to give them the sick days that they asked for. And that's going to go forward. We're going to side with the workers for once. We're going to get them what they need. It's not a matter of what they want. You know, look, it's like the old Rolling Stones song. Sometimes you get what you need, but you don't always get what you want. This is that moment. They need time off with their families. They need time off to go to a doctor. They need time off to make plans for the day after tomorrow. They need this stuff. Want is something else. This should be the basis. And this is a moment where Democrats, and they still can. Look, the messaging is still here. These rail companies are so profitable, enormously profitable. And I would argue so much so that our inflation problems, you kind of got to wonder if they're making the kind of obscene profit that they're making. Again, you're paying that profit in every product that you buy that gets shipped on those rails. You're paying that profit. Those workers are paying that profit by not having sick days. Now you go, but Rick, you know, they got historic raises. They got all these wonderful things. Yeah, that should have been negotiated years ago. That 24% raise is retroactive to a couple of years ago because they've been negotiating this. And I shouldn't say negotiating. The rail companies have been stonewalling this entire time. Again, it comes back. Point the finger where it belongs. The finger belongs pointed at the CEOs, the rail barons of this era, the Jay Goulds of this century. That's where the finger, that's where the blame, that's where this is where it should be pointing. And this is where Democrats should be standing on the floor, standing on the steps of the Capitol, running in front of any microphone that would be stuck in their face and say, look, this could be averted. This could be all averted if these rail companies simply gave these workers what they need, which is a bit of security in knowing that all of us take this for granted. Anybody try and make a doctor appointment recently? Yeah, I had to make a doctor appointment and they're going, well, you know, how about Tuesday in 3.5 months? How about making a dental checkup? Yeah, okay, 6 months. Pick a day in 6 months and we'll give you that day. These guys can't do this. They don't have the ability to go in 6 months, I know where I'm going to be. They don't. And by saying, no, you're going to have some time to ensure that you get off and that... This is a winning argument. When you explain the conditions that these people work under. Now, is it everyone in the rail industry? No. But the labor movement is about an injury to one being an injury to all. If you allow one worker to be harmed, if you allow one worker to be injured, if you allow one worker to be exploited, eventually it goes to everyone else. Which is why in this moment, labor people, union people like me are angry, frustrated, because I want a party. And this is where Republicans, maybe you can slide into this. Maybe Marco Rubio's onto something. Maybe Marco Rubio is going to be the champion of working people of the future. Maybe he is going to be the guy who goes, you know what? I'm going to put forth a piece of legislation to ensure all workers get sick days. Everyone has some dignity and respect in their workplace. Everybody has a chance to make a doctor appointment and get there. Everyone has the opportunity to take a day off to spend with a sick child or a spouse. Everybody has this opportunity. But as long as we say, no, see, we're going to force this contract down these handful of these workers' throats because everyone else is doing okay. Sorry, that ain't working. And good on the rail unions for going, you know what? If one union doesn't accept the contract, none of us accept it. I love how they're going, well, you know, it's only four of the unions that voted this down. The other eight wanted it. No. See, this is where solidarity matters. This is where understanding, you know, I stand with my brothers and sisters. This is where if they go on strike, you wouldn't see me crossing their picket lines. You'd see me turning my truck around and taking it back where I got it from. This is that moment. Another one of those moments that could bring working people together, could give us the opportunity to finally stand shoulder to shoulder. And what did they do? They neutered it. And they failed to move on the right messaging. Now, look, I look at Bernie Sanders as the guy who gets it. Sanders is going to push, and he's going to push. The fact that they came up with two bills is just insane to me. Now, I had a bunch of my Twitter influencer friends going, no, this is great. We're going to save the economy. We're going to get them the sick days. This is great. They passed two pieces of legislation. And I'm going, are you dumb or just stupid? Because you know what's going to happen. Both those bills are going to go to the Senate. there'll be some verbiage around both of them. One of them is going to pass. Which one do you think is going to pass? It's going to be the one with no sick days. It's going to be the one that imposes the contract and forces those workers to work under that contract until it's over. And then we end up doing this again down the road. The Marco Rubios of the world who are politically taking advantage of this moment going, no, I stand with the workers. Look at me, because it's a black eye on Biden. And this is a black eye on Biden. Now, here's the reality for all you Biden haters, who keep sending me, see, I told you he was a bad guy. I told you he didn't like workers. I told you he was horrible. For all of you, he didn't have a choice in this. I truly don't believe that he had a choice in this, because he's not going to allow the economy to come to a screeching halt. It would be political suicide. And I said this yesterday, this would be a murder-suicide pact if he did that. But you had to throw them a lifeline. You had to throw those sick. You had to do that. And they failed. And this half measure ain't cutting it. Now, there's still a chance, as I understand, Bernie Sanders is going to push for an amendment, which, good, we need that. And maybe they get one bill out of the Senate. Maybe, we'll see. It comes down to us, though. This is where we've got to be picking up the phone and calling our senators. We've got to be picking up the phone and demanding that they push to have this amended so that it is one bill. And that one bill gets passed and signed, including sick days. And then, Democrats, if you're listening, this is how you become the champion of working people. You say, we're going to put a floor under everyone's feet. We're going to ensure that everyone has access to paid time off. We're going to ensure that people have the ability to plan a doctor's appointment in 6 months when they need to get their teeth cleaned. That seems like common sense, seems like a no-brainer, seems simple if you're the party of the working class. So the messaging that's come out of this, and this is what's so frustrating to me, because, you know, even before the president came out and said this, I had people, you know, emailing me saying, you see, Rick, you know, Biden's going to side with the rail barons. The Democrats are just as bad as the Republicans. They're all in bed with the corporations. And how can you argue that they're not, given this moment? How can you argue that they're not? Now, look, gonna say it again. Big supporter of Joe Biden. Love the guy. I think he's done some really good things. I think the Democrats recently have done some really good things to help working families. The infrastructure bill, working on reshoring manufacturing, capping the insulin prices, all that stuff. All good stuff. This was a mistake. Now, I know, but Rick, you know, you said yourself this was never gonna go to a strike because of our laws. Congress was never going to not act. This was always going to be a political time bomb. This was always going to happen. Now, personally, if you're playing the game, I would have asked for a cooling off period to get onto the other side of the year. Put this in the lap of a Republican Speaker of the House. Let them put forth a piece of legislation. Because do you think, let me ask the other side of this, do you think Speaker McCarthy is going to move one piece of legislation that says we're going to ram this down their throat or amend it to take some of the raises and some of the things out of it that the rail barons are mad about and force that down the workers' throats? Do you think there's a second bill that says, hey, we're going to add sick days? Do you think a McCarthy speakership is going to bring that? Do you think the Republicans are going to do that? Of course not. They're not going to help the workers because they have always been the party that hates working people. But yet, in this moment, in this brief little moment, this window, and Rubio being the opportunist that he is, he saw that window because he's been trying to weasel into that space for a while. Without voting for anything, without proposing anything. Look, I want Rubio to be a pro-worker senator. I want him to stand with working people. I want him to really do something to help workers' lives get better. But all this was about for Rubio, this is an easy shot at unions. This is an easy shot at the Biden administration. That's what this is about. Because watch over the next couple of days. What does Rubio come out with policy-wise? Yeah, he's got some tweets. Yeah, he's going on the F channel. Yeah, he's out there saying the I stand with the workers against those union bosses who, I don't know. Still trying to figure out how this is the union boss's fault. What this is the rail barons, the real bosses, the real people who are causing this situation. Our big railroads, our monopolistic railroads. You basically have a duopoly in this country. You've got two big railroads on the east, two big railroads on the west. That's about it. And those companies are wildly profitable. Why? Well, my conservative friends, this is where you should be telling me, well, there's not any competition. There's no competition. And here's my other question for my conservative friends. And this is where how do we bring people together around this moment? You're the ones who tell me all the time, believe in competition, smaller, less intrusive stuff. Are you in favor of monopolies? Do you think having something so big, too big to fail, is a good thing? Do you think the fact that if the rail goes on strike, that the entire economy collapses? Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think having a handful of railroads controlling that much of our economic output, do you think that's a good thing? Maybe the movement forward here, maybe we start breaking some of these up. Don't let them consolidate. There's a consolidation plan right now going on. Maybe we stop that and we start breaking up some of these big behemoths. Some of these people who have so much power that they can tell the government to go, you know, pound sand. You're not getting anything out of us. Big enough to, they don't care about the consequences. Understand, the robber barons of this era, they know what would have happened if a strike would have happened. Understand. And this is where my mind goes. Okay, let's say a strike happens. It goes a week and the shelves are empty. The highways are jammed. We can't get, the supply chains are broken again. The economy's tanking and everyone's going to blame those workers. It's the union's fault. The robber barons, they're going to sit back and laugh because you know what they know? They know prices are going to skyrocket. Inflation's going to go through the roof. They're going to line their pockets. They, heads I win, tails you lose. That's what they know. And they know they play this game long enough, we'll turn on those workers. Because they've done it before. The quote that's always attributed to Jay Gould, I can easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. Can you imagine the ability to turn half of the working class against those railroad workers when things start to go south? How fast they would be able to do that? How fast they'd be able to tear things apart? And they're gleeful at doing it. Why? Because they know they're going to profit from it. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you get yours. You'll find ours from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. Make sure you grab that. Also, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickSmithShow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickSmithShow.com/history today. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
All So, you know, again, I keep coming back to this because I think it's really important that we as a working class rise up around this. Now, look, I spent a good portion of today out talking to union members. You know, we're here in Georgia to get people out to vote, to get someone in the Senate who's going to support workers' rights. And one of the things I keep talking about is the PRO Act, the idea that workers should be able to join and form unions freely from the harassment of corporations, undo the horrible effects of Taft-Hartley, get rid of this nonsensical no rights at work, this right to work state nonsense, and give people the ability to join and form unions. And look, even here in Georgia, which has been a right to work state for a very long time, you've got people who are going, it's ridiculous that you have the kind of ability that these companies have to divide people in the workplace by hiring people who are not going to be part of the union simply to cause that division. And why? Well, so they don't have to pay better wages, hours, and conditions. I mean, this is the part that I find really, really curious. How it is we're so easily divided. How it is we're so easily pitted against each other. And my hope is, and I keep coming back to this idea that, you know, at a certain level, we've got to find this thing that brings us together. And I think this rail situation, this could be part of it. This could be it. I got another email. And again, if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. G sent me this email that says, quote, Buttigieg could implement existing regulations citing safety. The union can observe all safety standards, inspect rail, all rolling stock, adhere to every existing rule and regulation, cite national security risk posed by hazardous tanker trains pulling through inhibited areas, urban and suburban populations, a slowdown strike effectively. The Cisco strike in New England was instructive. Secondary support by affiliated unions brought Cisco hat in hand to the bargaining table. 2,000 truck trailers filling streets would really send a message, saving pessimism for better times. Look, you know, this is why, again, I go back to the Taft-Hartley. They boycotted they made it illegal for secondary strikes and boycotts. The wealth class knows what they're doing. They know how to stop the movement of we, the working people, the ability of us to come together and support one another. And this is where, again, there's part of me, and I'm not advocating for this, by the way, just so my union friends know, but there's part of me that goes, at some point, working people have to go, you know what? The laws be damned. The rail barons don't follow the rules. They write them. Maybe it's time we, the people, step forward. Maybe it's time for we, the people, to demand. And not just for rail workers, but for all workers. I mean, the reality is these trains are getting so big. And look, we've talked to leaders of different unions that represent rail workers, and they keep telling us the same story over the last couple of years, the last decade, the last two decades. We've seen the consolidation from something like 40 railroads now down to, what, 7? Thousands of workers sent to the curb. And of course, the work still has to get done. The train's getting longer and bigger and heavier. What does that mean for you and me, the public? And look, you could follow every safety regulation, and I want them to. Not for what this email is suggesting, that we have a slowdown strike, but because it's the right thing to do. Follow safety concerns. I don't want bomb trains rolling down the tracks any more than anyone else does. But this is one of those moments. One of those moments where hopefully we wake up and hopefully we say enough is enough already. That is my hope. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you'll find ours. This is, I'll tell you, it's angering, frustrating, so much here. But email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I want to hear your thoughts. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the talk.
for listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So welcome back to Georgia as we continue our time here as covering the Walker-Warnoff. I get stuck on both of those because they're so close. But the reality is, as people, they're so far, they're diametrically opposed, polar opposites. But you know how many times I've screwed that up in the days where I've said Walker instead of Warnock or Warnock instead of Walker. I mean, it's I don't know if it's a brain thing or what, but they just sound similar. And I'm hoping when people go to the polls, well, I'm hoping that that they remember, you know, Herschel Walker lives in Texas, according to him. And I guess occasionally goes down to the border, according to him. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, this Walker-Warnock race. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah is a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com is the website. My favorite reporter over there. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, no problem. I've been to on the border, but that's all I got.
I've been to south of the border in South Carolina. Does that matter?
Right?
No, but you know, Walker comes out and says, I live in Texas. Shouldn't that be disqualifier right there?
Technically, it is a disqualifier. I think you could probably take him to court if he is elected, because he declared a homestead exemption in the state of Texas. It wasn't just that he has said, oh yeah, I live in Texas. No, he actually declares that he lives in Texas. And if he, I think his property that he had in Georgia was a rental property. Yeah. So I just, there's not, that's, it's not going to work out very well. So, and under Georgia law, like, that's, you can't do that. That's not how that works.
But the weird thing,
this works.
The weird thing to me is he's just so he's not even qualified, I don't know, to walk by the Senate, let alone be in it.
Yeah. And the thing is that, I don't know how many people have seen the latest ad that Warnock has out, where it just has people watching videos of Herschel Walker saying crazy stuff. It is the most hilarious video I've ever seen, because like, you feel exactly the same way that these people feel. My favorite one is whenever Warnock or Walker was making that stupid comment about the air in China and they steal our air and something. And there's like this guy who's just like doing the, you know, WTF motion with his hand. And he's like, it's all the same air. I was like, man, I'd wear a t-shirt with that on it. That's hilarious.
It reminds me, I compare what's going on right now to the movie Idiocracy. Have you ever seen that?
No, sorry.
It's well worth the watch. I mean, because there's a line in there where the main character, the really smart guy, goes, maybe you should put water on the crops so the crops will grow. And the one guy goes, water? You mean like in the toilet? Just that kind of moment that we're living the insanity, we're living the ridiculousness of what was just a bad movie from the 90s. Scary.
There was a candidate in Oklahoma that was running for a school board a couple of years ago. And it was an actual, like, the Democratic candidate was a former teacher, had been a school board member, and was then running for state board of superintendent of public instruction is what they call it in Oklahoma. And this other woman that was running against her was a dentist who had invested in a bunch of charter schools. And so there's this debate. And the Democrat just like turns to the Republican at one point and goes, you're a dentist. She's a dentist. And I think the state really felt that. And I kind of feel like that is the same thing here, where, you know, you don't want to disparage the guy too much, but you're kind of like, he's been hit in the head 700 times.
No, 700, I'd say 7,000, 70,000.
Right? Like, it's... Dude, no, bad idea. Would you trust him to, you know,
not even mow my lawn?
Sit your dog.
Not even mow my lawn.
Right? Like, that's the thing, is I would not trust him to dog sit.
And I've been trying to kill my lawn.
Salt.
Because I hate mowing it that much. No, but this is just one of those moments, and I'm hoping, you know, and to be honest, you know, some of the folks that we've talked to here, No, there's no changing hearts and minds at this moment. This is just about getting people to the polls and getting over the obstacles that Republicans have put in place. And they have, with this SB 202, have put numerous obstacles, shortened the amount of time for the runoff, closed down drop boxes, all kinds of stuff to limit people's access to the polls. But you feel the sense that people are going to, you know, walk through fire because of this. So I'm going to be interested to see how on the other side of this, when we look back at it, how effective the vote theft scheme was by Brian Kemp and the Republicans here with SB 202.
I think what's interesting about Georgia is that they've gone through, Democrats have gone through so many rounds of education about, you know, how to vote, how to register, how to re-register again and again and again. And then, you know, early voting and all the lawsuits and everything. I feel like they, Democrats have been so educated, thanks to Stacey Abrams, about this stuff that they kind of get it. Whereas a lot of these rules, Republicans have not really had to pay attention much to before, because they just, you know, they get to show up on election day and vote. And so I wonder the extent to which those voters are not prepared for some of these elections. Yeah. And if it turns out, I mean, because they don't vote early, if it turns out like, oh, I don't have time today to do it, then it's not a big stretch for them. Like the Republicans in Georgia, if you win that Senate race, it's not going to change the sway of the Senate for them. So there's no real incentive for Republicans to go out and vote. And there is for Democrats, because it's Reverend Warnock. I mean, he's a cool guy. He's a really smart, sweet dude.
Marxist. So I had someone, I wanted to say spell Marxism, but I didn't. Because, you know, look, but this is a working class person who's struggling at a, you know, working class job, admitted, you know, not making the wages that he needs to keep up. But yet, you know, the message that he's got in his head is, Warnock, Marxist. I go, that's it? Where'd you hear?
Well, I think they figured out that trying to claim that he wasn't a real Christian, I think that one was a huge flop. Because for a while, I feel like the whole first part of this election was Walker attacking his Christianity. And it's like, do you know what he does for a living? Do you know what he's dedicated his entire life to?
But isn't that the Republican plan? Isn't that the what Republicans do? They attack your strength and belittle your strength to the point where people start questioning your strengths. I mean, this is classic Republican campaign tactics.
I think to some extent there is that, but it seems like, you know, dating back 30, 40 years now, Republicans have always attacked a Democrat's faith. And so I wonder the extent to which Walker just thought, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Stop.
Because he's not smart enough.
No, stop.
To have a strategy.
Stop. The last sentence, no, Walker thought, no.
Ah, right. But I can see him making a really stupid, like, oh, this is what other people do, so I'm going to do this. And it's just not like, no, you have to actually legitimately think about who you're running against.
Yeah, I'm hoping that people get out, and I'm hoping that everyone gets out regardless, and that this is a true election, that the will of the people is done. And I'm hoping they vote for Raphael Warnock. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com. Make sure you check out the amazing work she does there. Let's move along. Oath Keeper, guilty. Well, both of them guilty. Seditious conspiracy.
Yeah, so they were all guilty on a couple of different charges. And then on sedition, there were two of them that were guilty and three of them that were not. The interesting thing is we chatted with a couple of the January 6th committee members this week about their thoughts. Jamie Raskin is just like this brilliant lawyer mind. And the way that he talked about it is, he was like, you know, it feels like it is you can tell in this case, the jury understood what was happening here, because they were able to distinguish between, you know, somebody who they think committed a seditious conspiracy versus someone who did not. It would be very easy for them to just be like, screw it, go in there, throw everybody in jail for sedition. But the fact that they broke it up, I think, will make it a little bit more difficult for them on an appeal. And so I hadn't really thought of that way. And that makes a lot of sense to me, the way that he explained it. So, you know, this hopefully will motivate the Proud Boys whenever it comes to what they're talking to the prosecutors about, if they'll make a deal or not based on, oh crap, I could actually go to prison for 20 years.
Yeah, no, and again, this is what I've been saying all along. These are the sentences I hope they get are the kind that should have been coming out a while ago to force people into going, no, I better cut a deal.
Yeah.
Because what I did could get me locked up for a long time. And because I think we need to get to the bottom of what happened on January 6th. I keep saying, I want to know who funded it. I want to know where the money came from. I want that. And I'm hoping with the January 6th commission, I'm hoping they publish that.
I think so too. I'm hoping that the piece of it that I think will link to a higher person is who were people like Stuart Rhodes and what's his name? The Proud Boys guy. Who were they talking to and coordinating with that was also working with the White House? Was it Mark Meadows or was it Roger Stone who was working with Mark Meadows? So like figuring out where those links are, I think will get us to the White House. And that's going to be, you know, the big piece of this.
Ultimately, do you think it goes all the way up to the White House? Do you think Trump was involved?
Yes,
in this?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we heard was there was a, I think it was from the January 6th committee, was a staffer, a lower level staffer who was asked to go buy a whole bunch of burner phones, went to CVS, paid cash for the burner phones, but entered his CVS phone number so that he could get the deal, coupons you get. So the charge was then recorded. So all of these burner phones that this person purchased, then you have to ask, okay, well, who were these burner phones given to and what phone, you know, who were they calling? So we know that there was some kind of sketchy phone calls that were happening. So if these were the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and the Women for America First people who organized all of this and helped pay money for it, and if they were going all the way up to Mark Meadows, I think that is the important piece, because once you get Mark Meadows, then he's like, I'm out. Like, he's going to sing.
Yeah, no, I agree. But the thing is I keep wondering why Trump keeps going further and further to the extreme. I mean, this dinner he had with the white supremacist, what are you thinking? And what do they have on him? Or why?
It would not surprise me if Trump didn't actually know enough about Nick Fuentes to understand exactly who he was. He probably just thought, oh, he's a white supremacist, not necessarily a Nazi. He did.
Oh, so
not
there's a
that
difference.
Coming.
There's a difference between, you know,
surprisingly,
degrees.
Surprisingly,
you could be a good
Nick
white
Fuentes,
Nazi.
Right. What Nick Fuentes, what was interesting is that he's definitely a Nazi, but he's more of a chauvinist. He pushes more chauvinist white supremacist language lately than he does Nazi stuff, which I feel like was very early, 2015.
In his development, early in the development was just, okay, I got it.
So it's entirely possible that Trump was like, who is Nick Fuentes? And then it showed a couple of videos where he's like, oh, he's just a white supremacist. I'm cool with that. You know, it's just but the thing is Kanye West is a Nazi.
Yeah,
I mean, he legit is. He has told people that he works with that he's fascinated by Hitler. He wanted to mention him in an album. Like, this is, he is, it's like, if you're going to meet with Kanye and you haven't been watching the news for the last year, then you have definitely missed something that's going on.
Yeah. You're
meeting with him. Even if he's bringing his Nazi buddy to brunch, like, it's just not the smartest thing to do. But, you know, Trump likes anybody who likes him.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah. No, well, it's interesting. What has been interesting is there have been a couple of Republicans who have come out and say, well, this probably wasn't a great idea.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked to a bunch of members. Like, the members went to the Thanksgiving. They came back this week. And so we've just been chasing down members being like, so what do you think about, you know, Trump having brunch with the Nazis? And so it's been interesting to see those people who are just like, you know, oh, well, I wouldn't have done that. Or, you know, like, really sort of passive responses. John Cornyn, we had to chase John Cornyn for 3 days to get an answer out of him. His first statement was, I've got better things to do than to sit here and, you know, denounce somebody for having a meal with a Nazi or something like that. And It's like, really, how long would it take you to be like, you know what, Nazis are bad? Like, really, how long does that take, yeah. John Cornyn? Day two, he ducked into an elevator. We're like asking him, you know, where, and he's just like, see you later. And then so my colleague chased after him and was like, is that no comment, sir? Elevator doors close. And so day three, finally, we tracked him down and got an answer from him. And he was like, well, you know, I'm not anti-Semitic. It's like, oh, thanks. Because we were really curious, like, where are you on the Jews, right? Like, what? we've gotten to the point where that's what we have to ask Republicans now is, yeah. Are you good with the Jews? Or do you want to, like, what? Where are you on this? And that's how sad it has become in Washington.
Wow.
It's desperate. You got to pull somebody's teeth out just to get them to be like, yeah, no, Nazis bad.
Yeah, Nazis are bad. But yeah, even Lindsey Graham wasn't is
yeah.
Well, what did he say? It was a bad day for Trump. I mean,
yeah, he was like, any day that you're. So we started out with like, any day that you're talking about Nazis and white supremacists instead of the economy or Joe Biden is a bad day for Trump. And it was like, you think? Like, do you really think that the strategy now for Donald Trump is just to be like, you know, when you're asked, hey, tell me, do you believe in Nazis, for him to just be like, let me talk to you about inflation. Like, no, that's not going to work well. Like, that's the one where people are going to be like, no, seriously, where are you on the Jews? Right. People want to know.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And, you know, if it was a bad day for Trump to have dinner with a white supremacist or a Nazi, you know, how bad is it that he admitted that he stole the documents that he had in Mar-a-Lago? I mean, and this is where, you know, I was talking to a MAGA cat wearing Gaucho. They made that up. The FBI done planted that. I'm going, no, he admitted it.
He admitted it on Truth Social. That was the craziest night ever. I was almost done with work for the night. And I just, like, you know, clicked over to look at Trump's Truth Social just to double check he wasn't having a meltdown. And then sure enough, he was having a meltdown and was like saying the weirdest thing about, you know, everybody else has done this, and which they haven't. And at least I was transparent about it. And it was just like, dude, you just admitted to it. Like, do you not see, like, don't you know his lawyers are just banging their heads on the desk right now?
No, but wasn't that his argument, though, that he had the power? He declassified everything, so
right.
He had the power to take it. So, of course, there's part of me that goes, of course, in his mind, yeah, he can admit it. Yeah, I did it. So what? I made it legal. It's okay, because I said so. I mean, right. that's the only defense.
Yeah, that's the only option that he's got, because the first thing he tried was, you know, well, somebody, you know, this, they planted this. And then the second one was, well, I didn't know that they had packed all this stuff up, which there is documentation that shows that they asked the White House, you shouldn't be packing this stuff up, so you're going to have to sign off on it. And the White House signed off on it. There is a document trail that goes back to this that is so so pronounced, and that the DOJ has in their hands right now. So there's no way that he wins on this. And what I've heard from people who are talking to prosecutors in the Justice Department is like, they're expecting an indictment within the next 90 days. So, yay.
That cannot come fast enough.
Right.
And finally, I want to get your thoughts on the Twitters. I know everyone's looking for the bail, where we're going to go. Some are going to Hive, mm-hmm. Mastodon. There's just so many now. But Musk has now, I guess, starting to suspend accounts and ban people. Dean Baker, who's been on this show a number of times, evidently got his account suspended. Andrew Lawrence from Media Matters, I guess his account suspended. What happened to the champion of free speech? What happened to that?
Yeah, that's what's been interesting about that, is that he's only for free speech if people are saying what he wants them to say. And that's not what free speech is. My favorite thing has been the fake people that are coming out who are getting verified, like the guy who came out as Jesus, you know, who was verified. That was amazing. And his bio says, like, you know, carpenter, healer.
Stealer.
Those have been fun. Like, that's the only real reason that I stick around, is just kind of to see the implosion, yeah. And also to see the fake accounts.
Not leaving.
I mean, that's the other thing, too, is there was a conversation, oddly enough, on The View with Alyssa Milano, where she made a really good point. Like, we can't cede that land to people like Elon Musk and the Nazis. Like, you can't let them have that. You shouldn't let them have that. I get why people are leaving. Like, it is sort of this mental health issue where you can only take it so long for like Nazis to yell at you, right?
And that's where you yell back. That's where you yell back.
Or just mute them. I mean, that's the worst thing. Don't block them.
Can't do that.
But if you mute them, then they're forced to see your stuff and you don't have to see any of theirs.
No. You gotta take on Nazis. You cannot cede ground to Nazis, and I'm not leaving. Elon Musk is gonna have to suspend and ban me, just like Dean Baker and Andrew Lawrence and the rest of the ones. Because he's thin-skinned, and this whole idea, this nonsense that he's a free speech, get out of here with that nonsense.
Yeah, that's crap. That's such crap.
Complete nonsense.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you fight back against that if he's just making stuff up about it. You got to figure out, like, you can't have terms of services who are like, if you do something I don't like, then you're gone.
Sure you can. Sure he can. It's a private company.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he can, but yeah. Then you're just...
And that's
where really is. There's no way he's going to make any money off of this. I mean, all of the
I don't know. I think he can fleece people for, you know, $20 for the blue check. I think he can make a little bit, but I think long term he's going to end up screwing himself. I think that's possible. But, you know, I personally think this is more about just ticking off the left and you know, making lib tears and all this. And I'm going, look, this is why you don't give power to rich people to be kings and dictators. He's showing us why.
Yeah, that's exactly what there he's doing. Go. And that's, I think, you know, there's,
tax him.
He's going to lose his money on it. That's what's been so great, is it's just like, you know, I get that you were able to get investors and stuff, but he cashed in $4 billion of his Tesla stock to buy this thing.
Yeah, but he's not going to be on the street corner selling pencils anytime soon.
No, but he's certainly not going to be the richest man in the world anymore.
And I'm okay with that. And this is why we need to start taxing people like him and using that money to help the homeless and the hungry and get education and healthcare for people. That's where we need to go. But Sarah, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out the work that she does. Rawstory.com is the website. Make sure you check that out. We'll get links out on social media how you can do it. Gonna take a quick break. Remember, if you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorites, you'll find ours, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1955. That was the day that Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. With that action, she helped to launch the civil rights movement in the United States. Rosa Parks is often portrayed as simply a weary woman, tired from a long day of work as a seamstress. While that was true, she was also a member of the NAACP, who had been trained in race relations at the Highlander Folk School in Tennessee. Her refusal to give up her seat was a political act. When she was arrested, E.D. Nixon looked into what happened. Nixon was a leader of his union, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. He called the police department to inquire about Parks, only to be told it was none of your damn business. He found a lawyer and posted her bail. Leaders in the black community decided to declare a bus boycott for the following Monday. They called themselves the Montgomery Improvement Association. The first day of the boycott was a rounding success, but many wanted to end the action. At a meeting of the Montgomery Improvement Association, Nixon gave an impassioned speech where he said, "What's the matter with you people? We have been living off the sweat of these washermen all of these years, and you have never done anything for them. Now you can have a chance to pay them back. And you're too damn scared to stand on your feet and be counted." They decided to continue the boycott. In order to keep it going, organizers established a private taxi service to ensure that black residents could get to and from work. For more than a year, they kept up the boycott until they won their fight for desegregation. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So real quick, you know, here in Georgia, I got to tell you, I've been having a fabulous time talking to people. And this is one of those things. If you remember the tour we did, the Working Class Heroes radio tour back in October up until the last election, the frame that I kept coming up with is, look, people want that thing that's going to pull them back together. And manufacturing is a huge part of that. Had so many conversations with people who go, you know, I remember this community, the used to be's that we talked about on the tour, that so many people today are going, hey, you know, why can't we rebuild that? Now, I've spent a lot of time today beating up on Joe Biden over this thing, and he needs it. But, you know, the fact that we're still talking about reshoring manufacturing, there's some stuff we should be really working on. And that's something that keeps coming up, keeps popping up. The idea that can bind us back together, that can bring us back together. And look, Joe, missed an opportunity here. Missed an opportunity. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to Atlanta as we continue our coverage here of the Georgia runoff and spending time, you know, talking with union members, talking with voters, you know, who've gone out and voted. And this is the thing, they're doing the early voting. In fact, ends Friday at 7 o'clock. Everybody I talk to, you know, the lines are long, and I'm going, should it be this difficult to vote? The answer to me, no. And here to share some thoughts on maybe why it's so difficult to vote and maybe what we should be doing and maybe how we go about getting things done. I've asked our good friend, investigative reporter Greg Pallas, to come share some thoughts with us. You may remember, Greg, the movie, the fabulous movie, Vigilante, Georgia's vote suppression hitman. Well, where we are here in Georgia, well, here it is. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
You're very welcome. Glad to be down here in Georgia with you, if across the town. I should also mention that WCPT had hosted Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman, and we are now, thanks to a donation from Jamie Foxx, we're able to offer the film for free through the Georgia runoff on Tuesday. So if you go to vigilantemovie.com, you can actually watch this thing, and then that's it. It won't even be available commercially.
There you go.
So this is it, vigilantemovie.com. It's about an hour, and grab your popcorn. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and if you don't, I'll pay for your therapy now. But here we go. So we're in Georgia. And yes, you know, the national press, I don't know what's with these guys. They are looking at these long lines. They're saying, isn't that wonderful? All these black people voting. There's no more Jim Crow. Well, I'm sorry. My lawyer, C.K. Hoffler, who is the chairwoman of Rainbow Push, she waited 11 hours.
Yeah.
What the heck is going on? And I'll tell you what's going on. Okay, here's the story. The reason there are long lines is not because of a Jim Crow's runaway. It's because 2 years ago, Raphael Warnock won in a special election against Kelly Loeffler, and he won by less than 100,000 votes. But 400,000 votes of his plurality, almost 500,000 votes, came from the mail-in balloting, which was allowed during COVID. So you had this massive mail-in vote that went over 2-1 for Warnock. So Governor Brian Kemp, our GOP hero, and by the way, who the Wall Street Journal just endorsed for president. He just got the endorsement of the Wall Street Journal for president.
Of course he did.
And one of the reasons why they endorsed him for president, I assume, is because 2 weeks after Warnock was elected by the mail-in vote, they changed the law, SB 202, to make mail-in balloting during a runoff all but illegal. Here's how they did it. First, they said the Atlanta area, they passed a law saying that counties with more than 100,000 active voters can't have more than one drop box per 100,000 active voters. Imagine that. 100,000 active voters have to share one ballot drop box. And now that only affects four of the 159 counties of Georgia. Oddly, it's the four big black counties of Georgia where they have a ballot box restriction. The others don't have that. They don't have to worry about the ballot box restriction. Not only that, well, they do have to worry about one thing. They're required to add drop boxes in the white rural areas. I'm not making this up. This is in law. This is in law in Georgia passed weeks after Warnock won and Ossoff and Biden won last time. Then they cut the runoff time. You'll love this one, Rick. I hope people are taking notes on this. But if you go to gregpalace.com, I can lay it out for you. But they cut the runoff time from 2 years ago when Warnock won from 60 days to 28 days. So that means that that Black people who tend to vote early, not tend to, the vast majority of Black people vote early by mail or in person at early voting stations. They crushed the time by 2/3. So think about that. They had 16 days of early voting 2 years ago when Warnock won, and he won the early vote. This time they've crushed it to 5 days in most counties. And after a court ruling by Gerald Griggs, the great NAACP attorney, after court ruling, they were able to get 6 or 7 days in a couple counties. So that you'll go from 16 days of early voting to 5 to 7 days of early voting. You take the mail-in, the ballot boxes, you reduce them in Black Atlanta, not by a minor amount, by 77%. Wow. That's by state law. They increase them in the white areas. I'm not making this up. And they also said that because Black people tend to use mail-in balloting and drop boxes, because for good reasons, they don't trust the Postal Service. I'll tell you why. They shuttered the drop boxes. So when you say voting ends at early voting ends at 7 p.m. Friday, at the same time, they're shuttering all the drop boxes. So that over the weekend, which by the way is usually the traditional Black Souls to the Polls voting day, there will be no early voting on Souls to the Polls weekend. There will be, and the ballot drop boxes are locked away in office buildings. There will be no drop boxes, even on election day. So if you're in a 5-hour line, but you have a ballot in your hand, you can't go and stick it in the drop box. So this is all because these are ballots that are won more than 2-1 by Reverend Warnock. In Atlanta, he won them 3-1. And so they are making it brutally difficult to vote in Atlanta. So people are waiting, saying, okay, my only choice, and the voting rights groups are saying, get in line, suffer it through. And by the way, they can't, while you're waiting 5 hours in line, this is no joke, that you can't take if someone hands you a slice of pizza, someone hands you a bottle of water while you're waiting 5 hours in line, this is Georgia, it's brutal. And there's been rain too, so you got rain, you got sun. If you take any food or water, it's a felony crime. Yeah. And so you have to understand what's going on here. And plus, other states allow you to mail in your ballot and then they count it if it's postmarked by election day. That's in California and most of American civilization. Well, outside of America, in Georgia, you have to have the ballot has to be received by the state and stamped by the state on election day by 7 p.m. So, so all the voting rights groups are saying, do not mail your ballot. Either try to get in during those early voting hours, wait in line or find that drop box, and because they cut the number of drop boxes, you have to hunt for that drop box.
It shouldn't be this difficult, Greg. This sounds way too complicated.
Oh. But one thing I will say, now here's the good news. African-American voters in Georgia are the most sophisticated voters in the nation, Black, white, orange, green, yellow, anything. They are, because they've gone through this Jim Crow stuff for years. Think about it. This is redneck Georgia, supposedly, redneck red, right? That's the trope from the national press. But the national press got caught with its newspaper pants down when Biden, Ossoff, and Warnock won 2 years ago, because they didn't understand that despite the Jim Crow, people will go out, they're gonna fight it. And it's a very sophisticated operation. And by the way, it's not done by the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has nothing to do with the turnout. This is all voting rights group. Black Voters Matter,
yeah.
NAACP, Campaign for a Prosperous, People's Agenda, Georgia Coalition for People's Agenda. These are groups you may have never heard of, but here they are powerful, they're organized, and it's quite amazing. But don't forget the evangelicals. For every progressive in Atlanta, you've got the evangelical vote downstate. And, I got to tell you, people on the coast just don't get it. And they see long lines. They go, oh, they, they're, they're accepting the Brian Kemp line.
Democracy's
working. Look at all those people in line. Well, they're only in line because you crushed their voting time by 2/3. You shut off their ballots. You won't let them mail in their votes. How do you even request a ballot? Now, in my film, Vigilante, which again, you can see free through Tuesday at vigilantemovie.com. Yes, by the way, since it's free, I'm not making money off that. Take my word for it. But the what's happened is we had a story about in Georgia, you have this system where any voter can challenge another voter. So we had this, we have GOP operatives, and it's only the Republicans. There's no Democratic challenges that I found yet. 149,000 voters have been challenged by GOP operatives. These are not the state. These are individual self-appointed vigilantes. One guy who, the Republican chairman in Columbus, as you'll see in the film, challenged the vote of 4,000 voters. He's in Columbus. That's Fort Benning. He's challenging mainly black soldiers assigned to military bases elsewhere. And I met, you'll see in the film, Major Gamaliel Turner, who is a career military officer, African-American. This guy challenges votes saying he doesn't live in Georgia. Why? Because as a soldier, he was assigned to California. And so he asked for an absentee ballot. They wouldn't send it to him. They said, you've been challenged. Well, guess what? I just heard from Major Turner. He didn't get his ballot. Once again, he's at serving in the military, career his whole life. He doesn't get his ballot. Again, he had to hire lawyers from Washington to fly to Georgia to get him his vote. This time he's flying into Georgia, as he says, that's a heck of a poll tax to fly 2,600 mile cast as well. But just to show you how powerful and important this is, that's what he is doing. That's what people are doing. That's why they'll stand in line, fly and do whatever it takes. So we'll have to see whether the Jim Crow wins or Warnock wins with his with people who are just committed and will just fight back. That's what it comes down to.
I talked to a guy who waited 2 hours in line to drop it off. It wasn't even a matter of casting his ballot. And I couldn't help but have this conversation. You know, I've never waited more than maybe 20 minutes during the height of any presidential election, let alone 2 hours, let alone, he said, 8 hours on election day a couple years ago. And I'm going, you know, these are committed voters. And this is one of those things where I'm hoping people are listening in areas that don't have these kind of long lines. Know that this could happen to you. This is one of those injury to one being an injury to all kind of scenarios, in my view.
Well, it's simple. I'm not a Georgian and I'm not partisan. I don't choose candidates. But if Jim Crow wins in Georgia, that's my Senate. That's my Senate. Herschel Walker will be determining what happens in Ukraine. You know, I mean, it's, look, whether you like him or not, what doesn't matter. The question is not whether Warnock is better than Walker. Excuse me. It's a question of whether Jim Crow is better than democracy.
Yeah. No,
that's
a good
point. That's what it really comes down to.
That's a good point. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Greg Palast. GregPalast.com, the website. Make sure you go to see the movie Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman, over at vigilantemovie.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Now, I understand you're part of a lawsuit that's been filed. Explain this, because I got your email.
Okay, yeah.
I got your email.
The Justice Department.
There was a lawsuit filed. Tell me about it.
Okay. What it is, I and several of the journalists here who've been following this and then joining with the help and advice of the major voting rights lawyers in America, we filed a complaint with the Justice Department. And why didn't we file a lawsuit? Have you looked at the judges lately that were appointed by Trump? So there's a bit of a fear of going to into the courtroom. But at the same time, so we're filing with the Justice Department to activate justice to at least do something simple. The idea of shuttering drop boxes on Souls to the Polls Day, the idea that this only applies, that you cut the drop boxes only in black Atlanta and increase them in the white counties. What we want is something simple. Action by the Justice Department, particularly a demand that they keep the drop boxes unopened and open and available for voters all through this weekend and Monday, where, again, they're being shuttered on Monday and Tuesday. So that, again, if you have your ballot, you have to wait in line to hand it in as opposed to just sticking it in a box. So, again, to increase the lines in Atlanta, and it's only affect Atlanta. There are also restrictions that are affecting Black Savannah, Augusta. So it's, you have to understand. And I don't think that Brian Kemp hates the color of these voters' skin. He hates the color of their vote, which is blue. That's what's really going on. Let's face it. Because also the reason why they attack Atlanta is Atlanta is, first of all, it's like San Francisco of the South. It's the gay capital of the South. The LGBTQ community here is activated, and they not many are voting for Herschel Walker. So they understand that it's not just racial. They're looking at there's a culture war here between Atlanta, Savannah, and the rest of Georgia. And that's the real battle. And, you know, it's hard for people on the coast to understand. I can't tell you how many people say, how could Walker win? He beats his wife. You know, he's paid for abortions, but he's anti-abortion. He's all this stuff. He's a born again Christian. The answer is the evangelicals don't care. Yep. And they use a line which they use with Trump. He's the imperfect vessel of God's will. So literally you have half the voters of Georgia think that, or half the people in Georgia think that Herschel Walker is the voice of God, but he's just an imperfect vessel. And I got to tell you, if you're in Georgia, you'll quickly learn that if he beat Alabama, and if you beat the Crimson Tide for Georgia, you can beat your wife. You can beat your dog. You beat Alabama. You got a free pass for anything.
Even if you live in Texas.
So it's like, I'm telling you, this is no joke. Remember that Brian Kemp always ends his speech not only with the usual political stuff of God bless America, but he says, God bless America and go dogs, the Bulldogs. So you have to understand how important football is here, but even more important, how much they are fearful of Atlanta replacing them. This is this whole thing about, you know, like the Jews will not replace us. That's kind of a catch-all for Atlanta can't replace us here in rural Georgia.
No, I've had this conversation numerous times over the last several days that they're changing the country. That there, it's this culture war thing that, you know, people living their lives and pursuing their happiness somehow infringes on their right to be as crazy as they want to be. It's remarkable kind of thinking that's out here.
You know, I was a union, labor union consultant. I understand how this works. I mean, I saw, if you'll see in the film Vigilante, we start out at a reenactment of the one single battle that the South won in Georgia against the Union Army. So they're reenacting this 4 seconds of victory for a white Georgia. And I talked to one of the reenactors, and he's got his Georgia Republic flag, which is basically a Confederate flag. And the guy, one thing, when you look at the guy and he says, we got to be independent, we got to get rid of this wokeism, and we got the new voter laws, so now we stand a chance of fighting back against the woke. Well, this guy works in a poultry factory. He's a chicken plucker. What does he get? Where's his, you know, that Brian Kemp refused to take federal money to expand Medicaid because they think that's a black health program. No. Black people in Georgia actually have pretty high incomes out of Atlanta. It's mostly for the rural white people who are really getting it in the neck.
Yeah,
but they're told, you know, this is socialism. And they would rather, this poor guy and this plucking chickens would rather give up his health insurance than give an opening for what he thinks is the gay Jewish black invasion of Georgia. On the other hand, you can't shout against the tide. Because look at this. We not only did Biden win, but you had an African-American and a Jewish senator elected from Georgia. They're right. They're not being replaced. They're being dragged into the 21st century. That's all. And it sounds painful, but when they arrive here, they'll have health insurance.
Yeah. Well, or you hope anyway. Because I had that exact same conversation. Someone said the reason that he's voting for Herschel Walker is because of Marxism. And I was kind of stopped because this is a guy probably making, you know, 12, 13 bucks an hour, probably no health care, you know, struggling to make ends meet. I'm sure he's getting by, but, you know, you go Marxism, that's your number one issue. And it's just bizarre to me.
Well, you know, you'll see Reverend Warnock in my film, Senator Warnock now. He took Martin Luther King's place at the Ebenezer Baptist Church. These are the Warnock and Ossoff are two of the most progressive senators we have. I mean, they have a lot in common with Bernie Sanders because they understand that what Georgia needs, it's that guy in the poultry factory who needs health insurance. It's that guy in the poultry factory who needs a higher minimum wage and protection. And what Brian Kemp, the other thing we find out in Brian Kemp is that, and it's not a minor thing, it was Brian Kemp's family, they used to be called the Habershams, who first brought slavery to Georgia, which had been a free state. Slavery was outlawed in Georgia, one of the only places in America where it was actually outlawed. But the Kemp family first brought in slaves, got the King of England just before the Revolution to give them an exception and to overcome the local law to bring in African Americans. And the thing is, so their money is from plantations, and they're maintaining what these poor guys in the poultry factory don't get. Some of them get it, but some don't. They don't understand that they're still on Brian Kemp's plantation.
Yeah.
They're still on Brian Kemp. And this has been a problem in Georgia, because don't forget, after the Civil War, there was, instead of owning black people, they kind of rented them through the sharecropper system. But as the people warned who lived here before slaves arrived, were brought in, they said, we'll be reduced to slavery. We'll be reduced to slave wages. That's what happened. The small farmers became sharecroppers of the plantation. It's still a plantation economy. And Brian Kemp is still the man in the manor house, except that the nature of the plantation has changed. They're not picking cotton anymore. Rather, the money is in, like, for example, Brian Kemp owns these massive plantations. He has a company called Plantation LLC, believe it or not. His plantations are now these giant toilet paper farms. He sells pine trees, which they chop up for toilet paper. And I say they, that's the Koch Industries, the Koch Brothers company, which takes the Kemp's Georgia pines and turns them into toilet paper. But the real issue is that there's still, again, plantation wages, plantation conditions here, and they get people to kiss the whip that beats them. And that's what is the sad thing when you go downstate. Yep. And you understand it. I'm sympathetic, but it's hard for them to get the message, because they will vote against their economic interests because they're concerned about those strange, dark-skinned gay people who's probably Jewish in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of days. I'm hoping folks get out to vote. Early voting ends Friday at 7 p.m. Make sure you get out to vote before they're on December 6th. If you don't get in the early voting period, Greg, good on you for bringing this to light. I hope people will go to see the movie. Vigilantemovie.com, free. Get your popcorn, make it an event out of it, and then get angry and let's do something about it to fix all of this shenanigans. Greg, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
You're the best, Rick. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Our good friend, Greg Palast. Make sure you check out the website, gregpalast.com. Again, vigilantemovie.com. That's the website to check out the movie. Highly, highly suggest it. I've seen it now 5 times. Every time I get just as angry. And you're going to be angry too. The reality in this is very simple. When you look at what they have done with this Senate Bill 202, when you look at the kind of roadblocks that they have put in the way for people just to vote. And this is the thing, as I'm talking to people and explaining, this is what's going on. They're shocked. They go, how can that be? It's happening to them. And our mainstream media hasn't even begun to explain, because in areas that aren't affected, as Greg pointed out, Atlanta's getting one Dropbox per 100,000 people. I talked to a guy from one of the suburbs. I just walked right in. Talked to a guy in Atlanta, 2 hours. Do you think this was done on purpose? Do you think that they knew what they were doing when they decided that, hey, we're going to put these giant roadblocks in the way? Of course they did. And for all those election deniers out there who think that, Biden was coding in the basement, the real steal is what these Republican governors and these legislatures have gotten away with. Rigging the election before the first ballot's even cast, putting up these massive roadblocks, challenging thousands of people's ability to vote just because they can, for no reason. And that's why you check out vigilantemovie.com. Check out the movie. You'll be shocked. Highly suggest it. Remember, vigilantemovie.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the big story the other day, the U.S. beat Iran in soccer 1-0. And I was in a meeting at the time, rousing applause. And I'm like, I don't even watch soccer. But I guess it's one of these things where, you know, hey, if the U.S. wins something, that's great. We want that. And especially, hey, if it is Iran. And here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, especially maybe the soccer. How important really is this? I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come join us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's a big deal. And of course, as you know, I used to live in Iran, and in Congress, I worked through the Clinton and Bush administrations working with Iranian issues. It's a big deal for a couple reasons. We don't do that well in soccer. I'm shocked we beat the Iranian team. All right. If this was football, it'd be different comment I'd make, but soccer, we're different. But in Iran, some of the people went out into the streets and applauded us defeating their own team, which is fascinating because they are avid soccer fans. In fact, a friend of mine told me that one, I think former player or something, that was honking his horn was actually shot and killed for doing that by the Iranian regime. So yeah, so it's a big psychological deal. And some of the Iranians said, good, I'm glad you defeated the Islamic government.
As I said, anytime the U.S. wins something, I'm happy. And the room ecstatic because it was Iran. Let's move to where I'm at. I'm in Georgia right now for the runoff election. I'm looking forward to this being over because I'm just shocked that we're in this situation. I got to bring up the Herschel Walker thing. I mean, I can't believe it's
which one? The latest two faux pas, or you want to go back?
No, all of this. I can't believe all of it. But, you know, I guess recently admitted, yeah, I live in Texas.
Texas. And I put in my news notes, oops. He said, well, I made this decision in my home in Texas. And then I decided, and then I came to Georgia.
And occasionally he goes down to the border. I mean, and...
Right.
But, you know, the thing is this guy is so unqualified. Look, there's a lot of unqualified people in Congress. Always have been. Right. I don't know to this level.
This one surprised me that Walker got to where he got to. You know, one of the most telling clips is his son on YouTube, who basically came out and said, look, we thought, you know, dad would make this right. We thought he would be honest about it, about the kids and, you know, the whole nine yards. And when, if you watch the YouTube of his son, I think he's about 21. It's painful for him.
Yeah.
He's not some angry kid that wants to hurt his dad. This is a kid that said, I thought we had it all settled and he was going to come out and do this. Of course, now his son doesn't support him because of the way he did it. So you look at that and you think, why didn't, first of all, think about it. Herschel Walker, who obviously sat down privately with his family or disjointed family or whatever you want to call it, why didn't he then follow through? And he could have, you know, at least put that behind him. Not that he wouldn't have made a bunch of other mistakes on substance and policy, but he's continuously done that. But he got so close. Like any election, you know this, you're a grassroots guy, you don't take this one for advantage. I mean, I believe that Warnock's going to win and Obama's coming in, which is going to help, but this is not one to take lightly.
No, but the thing is, you know, you've worked on way more campaigns than I even know about. But, you know, when you're deciding to run, you talk about the things that are your strengths, you think about that, but you spend more time on your negatives and on, you know, going through your closet, so to speak, and finding the skeletons and knowing where they're buried. Did they do none of this for Herschel Walker? Did they do no background checks? Did they do nothing? No op research to ensure that, hey, we have an answer for all of the horrible things that you've done? I don't know if they did.
I thought they would. Look, I remember an opposition research case one time where we got it back and we're like, you know, for this candidate, and we give it to him and we're going to go through point by point. And he releases it at a staff meeting of 12 people. And of course, it was in the news within 12 minutes. Yeah. And it was horrific. And with Walker's case, they had to have known this. It's a U.S. Senate race. They pay people good money. I would love to have been doing the opposition research. They had to pay a lot of money on Herschel.
Yeah.
A lot. There was a lot to go through.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was the werewolf blood. I don't know. I got to tell you, because I'm here on the ground, we're talking to people who are voting. And look, there's no changing of hearts and minds in this moment. The push right now is just getting people out to vote. But I'm amazed at even the comments of the people who are going to vote for him, who believe he's not qualified and believe that he's not the brightest guy in the box and believe that he's done a whole bunch of horrible things. But they justify it because he's got the right hat. He's got the red hat, man.
And then there was another interesting issue during that election, because I followed, as you know, we followed that Wisconsin, Ohio, you know, the elections we all followed because they were the key elections. And I talked to people, which was fascinating, from Georgia, who thought Walker was horrible and they really think they would vote for him. They weren't decided. And these weren't, you know, Republicans. These were just basically independent people. And then the debate came up and then I got the weirdest feedback that I've had in years on a candidate. And they're like, Walker's the street guy. The other guy's too refined. It's not a prize fight. It's a U.S. Senate seat. They said that, though.
No. Look, you got to find something. You got to find something to be positive about. And if that's the argument, he's a street guy. Maybe that appeals to some. Because look, I want somebody who's going to be a fighter. I want somebody who's going to, you know, when things happen, I want somebody who's going to get in there and mix it up. You know, I've said about the Democrats for years, and you've heard me say this: in a street fight, most Democrats will just offer to hold your coat. I can see that you would go, Walker's going to get in there. He's going to plug the hole, so to speak. I'm not quite sure that I liked watching him run the football. This running our government, not so thrilled about.
I think he is a street fighter, but here's the problem. He doesn't know the name of the street. Okay. That's a problem.
That right? Most certainly a problem. Now Obama's coming into town because look, all resources are here. This is a national election now for these next couple of days. Is this going to help, do you think?
Yes. I think Obama will help, because this is a matter of the base getting out. One of the mistakes was made in an election against me one time. Somebody got within the closest they ever got 5,000 votes. They assumed the next election they would start with the same amount of voters. You don't.
Right.
And the political geniuses on both sides know you're not necessarily starting out with the same amount of people. So some of the base who felt, well, it was close, but Walker was ahead. And if it wasn't for the Libertarian, he would, you know, may have, quote, have won. Then I think that base needs to come out. So what President Obama will do is he won't turn people's minds in a different direction, you know, that are going to support Walker, but he can reaffirm, I believe, to get the base numbers out.
No, you got to energize people. And sadly, I mean, you know, some of the people I've talked to didn't even know there's a runoff going on. Right. Even though the numbers are impressive, people are getting out to vote. And this is a good thing. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I got to get your thought on this this Oath Keeper case, though, real quick. You know, two guys found guilty of seditious conspiracy. This kind of puts it in writing. There was a conspiracy.
Right. This is important for several reasons. You and I on your show, I remember when the first conviction and sentencing came out, we were both like, you've got to be kidding me, because the penalty was small.
Yeah.
And now, though, this is a sedition. There's been a conviction on that issue, which is a big deal. And I'm really going to be curious to see the sentencing, because if the sentencing is tough, there are many other people to go down the line in this thing yet. So it establishes, you're correct. First of all, in the legal terms, in the legal courtrooms, there was sedition. There is that charge. It wasn't destruction of property. It was sedition, which is also the attempt, obviously, to overturn an election of the United States. So that's a big deal. But it should send a message down the line to others who were part of this. I don't know what was all in the court hearings, but you can imagine that there were networks, there were emails, people. They just didn't say, oh, I'm going to go to that site and then run up to the Capitol. There were plans that were made, a direct planning. That's what led to the conviction on the sedition charge. So I think it's a big deal for the additional cases.
Now, have there been people in the past convicted of seditious conspiracy? And then what have we done with them? Have we hung them, electrocuted them? Have we shot them? Have we done any of those things?
Might have been in the 1800s. I mean, look, their duels were still legal on the floor of the House at one point in time. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping for maximum sentences, because as you just said, I think to this point, way too paltry for the crime that I believe they committed and that the courts have said they've committed. And now it's documented there was this conspiracy. Now, I got to get to the big issue yesterday, because I've been hearing about it from union members all over the place, this rail situation. And I said from the beginning, just so we're on the same page, there was never going to be a strike. They were never going to allow a strike to happen. Congress eventually was going to step in. I'm just upset at the messaging and the way that the president went about it. Look, I'm a supporter of Joe Biden's. I voted for him. I've been on board. I think he's doing the right things policy-wise. I think this was a mistake in the way they went about it. This was always going to be the outcome, but I think the way they went about it was wrong.
I agree. I think that there's a reason they did it, and that doesn't make it right. I believe the White House and the people running it and everybody involved with this, the political system in its entirety, went into panic mode. That's what I believe happened due to inflation, the economy, everything going on an economic base. And I think they went into panic mode that if this actually occurred, then they were going to, be thrown into the depths of Hades of the political world and the economic world. So they had to do something. Now, the problem with this, too, is that you had the 290 to 137 votes, which you had a good block of Republicans that supported, the reaffirming the Biden measures, what this is, the Biden deal that was rejected.
Yeah, forcing the contract on the rail people.
And of course, the White House thought that deal was going to be accepted. And what, four different unions within rejected it, membership, I think?
Four of them.
I think they thought it was going to be accepted. So I don't think it's a matter of pride of authorship where they said, well, they rejected our contract that we wanted to negotiate through law, so we're going to put it through. I think now it's a matter, honestly, of panic. But where the messaging is bad, the issue at heart was that there was no support from the White House for the sick days. And I tell a lot of people, this isn't an issue just about money. This is an issue where people didn't have a day off.
Yep.
For how long? Forever.
No, these are guys who are on call, 24/7, 365. If a loved one gets sick, they don't get to go home. They don't get the day off. They don't get the peace of mind of knowing, hey, in 2 weeks, I can plan that preventative, that health care, that doctor's visit to check my blood pressure or get, whatever. There's none of that for these guys. And this was the moment. And it goes back to that age-old question. Do you live to work or work to live? And these guys are like, look, we need some certainty in our lives. And this is where I think the administration fell down. Again, I go back to this was always going to be what was going to happen. No one was going to allow a strike to happen. It would be too devastating for the economy.
Well,
but they could have come out and said, look, these greedy railroads have been making profit hand over fist, 50% profit rate over their costs, $23 billion profit last year, $22.1 billion in the first three quarters of this year. They can afford this. They're just choosing not to. And they could have said, look, we're going to take this and make sure that every worker in this country has sick days and put forth legislation for that. Instead of this, we're going to put up two bills, one that's going to ram it down your throat and then one that says, oh, we're going to give you some sick days, knowing that's never going to pass the Senate.
And that's the problem, because if you look at the amount of Republican votes that the bill had, and if you look at the final vote count, technically, in a sense, the Democratic side did not need the Republicans because they lost 8 votes. And I really think out of the 7 or 8, I forget what it was, but votes they lost, if it came down to it, they wouldn't have lost those votes if push came to shove. So they really only needed probably 10 Republicans, although they got more. Now, the reason I went through that whole counting scenario there is because of this. I don't understand why they just didn't put the sick days in the original one bill.
Yep.
Here you go, up or down vote. When you've got an up or down vote, there's people that are going to be standing there, Republicans going, I'm going to vote for that. I've got rail in my district, in my state. So they would have gotten everything they wanted. Now, here's why I think they didn't do it. And this becomes pride of authorship. Well, the White House bill that came over didn't have the sick days in it. So they used an arcane method. And I can't even find out, but I'm going to guess, motion to recommit, I'm going to guess, they used an arcane method to split the baby. So here's your one bill with 290 some votes. Then you have, which would be a mandated 7 sick days, I think. They added 6 to the one, 7 sick days. Sick days, and then they had a separate motion on that. So when the bill goes to the Senate can accept just the bill and the sick days don't exist. Now, Bernie Sanders is going to have something to say for that because Bernie wants the chance to have an amendment process to re-add to the original bill. Now, that means, of course, the original bill has to come back to the House then for a up or down, no change vote. One hit. That's it.
So do you think this is still possible? Because it's my view that the one in the Senate will pass. It'll get the, it may get the 60 votes, but the other one certainly is not going. The one with the sick days is not going to make it through. So what you're saying is possibly Sanders can tie this up to where maybe down the road they could get the sick days?
They might be able to. The only thing that, look, everybody knows what they did. They didn't add it to the original bill. So that kind of tells you somebody picked up the phone to somebody in the Senate and says, hey, can we pass this thing with the 7 days in it? I don't know. I mean, this kind of conversation must have happened. So it's going over. Now, Sanders is going to try to his magic to get an amendment process where they would get an amendment. The Senate doesn't know where it's at on this at all yet. Right. I would say either side doesn't know where it's at. So there's a possibility it might happen, but I'm going to go on the probability that it won't. You'll get the agreement and, hey, sorry, we'll try somewhere else to get the other days. But Sanders will give it 190% effort. He's not BSing. Bernie's going to try to push all the buttons possible.
And thank goodness for Bernie. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that bugs me. And this is where if Democrats are going to be the party of the working class and they're going to stand up for working people and Biden, the most pro-union president ever. And again, I still believe that he is. This was a put up or shut up moment. This was an opportunity to prove that and not leave the door open for the Marco Rubios of the world to then step in and say, I'm going to side with the workers, knowing that he's never going to vote for those sick days. We both know that's never going to happen.
And what they're doing by using the method they use, which again, I will argue they could have put the sick days in that one bill and then said, okay, you want to down the contract? You want to go on strike? You want everybody to not, you know, work, blah, blah, blah. People would have voted for it, including at least 10 Republicans, which if they were short on the Democrat side, they would get what they would need. So they would have had the votes. This was a way, like I said, to kind of split the baby, kind of make the Senate have a maybe easier go of it, I guess. But you're right. It will allow the Marco Rubios of the world, no matter if the 7 sick days, if they don't get in by amendment, if I was Rubio, I'd say, well, it wasn't good enough for the House to put it in the bill. Hey, I supported the measure.
Yep. No, it's sure. It's angering and it's frustrating. And this is just another one of those moments where I think Democrats are just bad at messaging. And there were so many good opportunities to turn this around. Instead, all we heard yesterday is Biden did this. Instead of, it was the rail companies who did this. The strike could have been averted simply by the rail companies going, yes, we're going to show dignity and respect to our workers by giving them just a little bit. All they wanted was 4 days. Just giving them those 4 days, which would have cost them pennies on the dollar to be able to do. And they chose not to because, well, our laws are so badly broken that they know there's no consequences. And that's just, it's where my anger level is with the Democrats.
Right. Yeah, I agree because, again, the railroads will be able to even say, whoa, that, you know, that president's deal didn't have that in there, you know, and the House reaffirmed it and put it in a separate bill. It gives the railroads the ability to skate when they shouldn't be able to skate.
Yeah. Lastly, before I let you go, zombie virus.
Ooh.
Zombie virus.
Hey, I don't know what to believe anymore, but I've got to tell you, there's this 45,000-year-old, this is a climate change deal, 45,000-year-old virus. And the scientists are saying areas are thawing and this thing's going to be alive. And it's a 45,000-year-old zombie type of virus that may come alive.
It's alive.
And it's not in China. It's not in China.
It's not in China. Do we have a lab there by any chance?
I don't know.
Well, we will be keeping an eye on the zombie virus. But Bob, as always, I appreciate the time, my good friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Thank you. Our good friend Bob Ney. The zombie virus, it's coming. It's coming for you. But seriously, I go back to this. The reality is I think they messaged this in all the wrong ways. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a question, comment, something on your mind? Hit me up with an email. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you'll find ours. Quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Are you
Tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, got an email from Aaron that I can't argue with. Look, I've gotten a lot of emails from people very angry about this rail situation. And Aaron writes, railroad octopus monopoly, no offense to octopuses, is running our national rail as if it were a fast food restaurant. By denying the rail workers and the rail union to strike, Biden, Buttigieg, Pelosi, Schumer, Wall Street rep et al. Denies labor its only power to strike, to realize its power, to inspire a movement, he writes, resulting in people increasingly desperate, impoverished, and willing to vote for some mad circus midway barker. He says a working person with a union paycheck to deposit will walk by a ranting madman in Town Square saying, what a nut. He'll muse on his way to Sears to buy a new fridge for his family. But an unemployed guy having just got off the couch in his parents' basement on his way to buy a lottery ticket will stop by and listen to the madman spew ethno-state-Christo-fascism and hate. He says it's pretty simple. And it goes back to, you know, something I've heard said by a number of folks. If you give me some people who are desperate, some people who are struggling, some people who are a little afraid, a little fearful, you give me enough time, to message and propagandize to them, I'll give you a Jehovah's Witness or a jihadist. We can have those extremes when people are desperate and pliable. And this is where, you know, look, I get Aaron's point. I'm as frustrated as anyone. But here's the reality. A strike was never going to happen. It just wasn't. In this country, how people feel in the economy, that's how people are going to vote. And, you know, the thought was we're going to lose billions of dollars a day. It's going to lay off hundreds of thousands of people. There's going to be all of this chaos. And while I would personally, if I'm in that situation, I let them strike, because ultimately strikes are about public perception and the public getting behind it or being against it. And this is a gamble when you go on strike. But the messaging here for me is right. The messaging here is an opportunity to take this from just being a handful of engineers, a handful of working people who have the ability to demand something and get attention, to making this something that you could do for everyone. This could be the call of a movement. This could be an opportunity to build that movement and bring people together and unite us across red hat, blue hat. This could get us back to caring about hard hats, caring about working people, caring about these folks. But instead, what Democrats do, what we knew they were going to do, they're going to force this contract on them. Now, look, are there good things in there? Yes. Are they better than they would have been had the president not gotten involved? Yes. It's much better because the president got involved. Is it better than anything Trump would have done? Absolutely, unequivocally, without question. Because understand, they've been negotiating this for years. Finally, the president said, no, we're going to move this forward. Now, this could have been, and still can. There still is an opportunity to make this a movement issue, to make this, and Democrats, listen up. This is an opportunity to be the party of the working class. This is an opportunity to show working people that you're willing to throw your coat on the ground, ball up your digits, and get in there and fight for people. This is that moment. This is that call to action. This is that opportunity. As I've been saying, this is that moment. It's time to put up or shut up. It's time to, you've been talking the talk, it's time to walk the walk. This is that moment. And I keep coming back to something very simple. Unions make people's lives better. Union job, better life. But I look at these engineers. It's not about the money. Yeah, they threw a bunch of money at this. They did. But they kept that one thing, that control. And this is where the messaging needs to go. Workers have to have something of a say, some voice, some ability to have, well, direction in their lives. And sadly, these railroad engineers, if you know what kind of a life they lead, you wouldn't take the job. And I know people say, well, if they don't like it, they can leave. Well, you know what? That's easier said than done. These folks are saying, no, we're not going to leave. We're going to stand and we're going to fight. We're going to make things better. And this has all the right messaging. These workers were told they were essential frontline heroes forced to work during the pandemic because they were our supply line. They were bringing us the stuff we need and still are. This is an opportunity to bring people together. This is that chance if Democrats will take it. This is that moment if Democrats will step forward and say, you know what? We're going to push this. I'm disappointed, as disappointed as I can possibly be, that they moved two separate pieces of legislation instead of one. This should have been one bill. If I'm there, this is one piece of legislation. This is, you put those 4 sick days in this contract, you amend this with those 4 sick days, and you make these workers' lives better at the expense of these extraordinarily profitable railroads. Or better yet, maybe we start breaking them up. Put competition back in so that they're not such a behemoth in the room that can crash our economy if workers choose to enact their rights. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Aaron, thanks so much for the email. See you back here next time.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.